Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our amazing guest for the day, Charlotte Dunford. Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, really excited to get into your story. I know that Charlotte now buys small, medium mobile home parks and excited to hear about, you know, everything mobile home park related and about what you're doing today. So why don't you start us off, Charlotte, with helping us understand a bit about your background and how and why you got into real estate and then mobile home parks.
Right. So I got into real estate because my family did real estate or whatever. Long story short, it's a complicated story, but I'll give it. Long story short, I came to the United States from China when I was 16 years old. My parents did not come with me. I came by myself to go to American high school to give myself a better chance to go to a good American university, which is exactly what I did. And I graduated from high school, went to college here at Georgia Institute of Technology, one of the top engineering schools here in the South. Getting into college as an industrial engineering student, I quickly discovered my love and passion for business, and I switched to business major. After graduating with a Bachelor of Science and did a business in 2017, I took a corporate job like a lot of business students would as a business analyst. And during the time I was a business analyst, I used my salary to finance my first deal as in a single family home in South Atlanta. I was always...
Wait. I love where you're going, and there's just so much to your story. I just want to quickly ask you, Charlotte. So, I mean, this is pretty cool. You came over from China. Your parents are still there. They never came back.
Yes.
Okay.
They are.
Yeah. And, you know, you were an immigrant going to school all by yourself here in the United States, and you decided to purchase a single family home rental with your, like, basically your income as a business analyst
right
after college. So why did you decide to do that?
Because I have always been extremely interested in real estate because the background I came from under the communist regime that I grew up in, you know, we were not allowed to buy any properties. That was just not a thing. You lease it from the government for 70 years and then you have to give it back. So owning a property has always been this dream and this fascination I had with it. So getting into real estate was a no-brainer and I wanted to build wealth. And so I pretty much started my super studying mode. And then I researched and read books, listened to podcasts, you know, connected with mentors, people in the industry to start my first deal. And that was quite a big learning curve, but I got through it. So using my first job salary to qualify for this deal, small deal, a single family home in the South of Atlanta. And then, you know, after a while, I think a year after my first deal, no, actually 6 months after my first deal, I started looking into, you know, scaling a little bit. So I used, you know, again, used my salary to qualify for a duplex in the north of Georgia. It's, you know, in Calhoun, Georgia, very good market and treated me very well, that deal. And I sold the deal earlier 2021 and it was excellent return. And also I sold my first deal as well. So that's how I got started. And then I just discovered more about myself and what I really want to do and what I'm really good at. And I discovered that, you know, I really want to be an entrepreneur. I really want to do this full time. I want to start a company. And, you know, I think I'm capable of that. Instead of working a corporate job, I decided to do that. And I took the jump.
Can I ask you really, Charlotte, just to expand a bit on that, because I'm so curious, you know, how did you discover that, you know, you didn't necessarily want to be working in a corporate job and that you want to be an entrepreneur?
Right. So I have taken lots of risks in my life, and I obviously, coming from China at the tender age of 16, I didn't speak English. I didn't have anything. So that was a big risk in itself. So my mindset has always been, I've taken this amount of risk. I've challenged myself this much already, and I've never done things on a traditional path per se, and I wasn't going to start then. I just did not see working a corporate job and climbing up the corporate ladder, one, something that I aspire to do, because I have done that much, gone so far. I wanted to achieve something much, much bigger. That's one thing. And number two, I found myself not only not enjoying myself at my corporate job, also not particularly extremely good at the particular job position I was in. I felt very limited, and I felt that I could not create and really become the visionary that I am for John Square Capital today to do the things I wanted to do. So that's why, on top of that, I graduated a business student with kind of technology as this concentration with a certificate in entrepreneurship. And I've always been interested in that. And that just really further confirmed my belief about myself and what I wanted to do.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that makes so much sense. And I can completely concur with you when you said the word limited, like working in a corporate job, even though mine was real estate related, I still felt so limited just in terms of what I was being asked to do, what my, you know, daily tasks were, and what my sphere of communications was. Exactly. It just now, you know, being in real estate, it's like the world is literally like our oyster. You know, we can do whatever we want. We can connect with whomever we want. Mm-hmm. It's all up to us. You know, I mean, yes, there's like some, you know, yes, then you're responsible for everything. You know, you're responsible for all aspects of the business rather than just your one little, but it's still so much more satisfying to me. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thanks for sharing a bit about that. And, you know, it's an amazing journey that you're on and you're so young. I love it. So tell us more about your journey, you know, so it sounds like you started in single family homes. What came next?
So next came the duplex that I got, also using my salary to finance it. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of money I saved with my husband at the time. I was still in school. I was married young at 22 years old, and my husband was also 21, 22. So he did not have a job yet. He was still a student at Georgia Tech, the same college I went to. And then next was pretty much the biggest jump, and that I still to this day think that the best decision I've ever made. Sounds so cliche for any entrepreneur to start their business, say, oh, I quit school or I quit my job to do this, and that's the best thing I've ever done. For me, it really has been the best thing I've ever done, other than coming to the United States and meeting my husband, obviously. And then, so that really was a big risk at the time. A lot of people were concerned, including my own family, because obviously I was young. My husband did not have a job. We did not have much saved up. This is a brand new venture. I've never started a business before. And now you're quitting your full-time job to do this. So it was a big risk, but I did take this risk carefully. And I think that was an educated risk and calculated risk. And I believe that there will be huge rewards at the end for calculated risks taken, because I learned so much about the real estate space. And I've had some experience, and though limited, but for what I wanted to do, I felt that I could learn a lot more about actually doing it. I was young, and I felt like if not now, when? So I quit my job and started the business, and it grew up. It grew to be, I think I started John Square Capital. I quit my job in 2019, bought my first mobile home park in August 2019, second mobile home park, November 2019, third, December 2019. And then 2020 and 2021 just grew like crazy. And John Square Capital has grew like crazy. And now it has $4.7 million in investor subscription and 24 parks and two more in the pipeline and more counting.
Awesome. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. That's fantastic. You know, and you know, you're just on this amazing trajectory. I can't wait to see where you go. So talk to us now about how you decided to get into the mobile home park space and, you know, everything that comes with that, like finding your business partner and why you like mobile home parks and how you got that first deal.
Great. Great questions. I think the reason why I went into mobile home parks was because a few reasons. I'm a firm believer in escaping competition and creating monopoly in a small niche and then expand on that. That's how you succeed. And I've read this book, my favorite book of all time, called From Zero to One by Peter Thiel, a Silicon Valley investor. He is the co-founder of PayPal and extremely successful in entrepreneur. And he has this book. This book's concept talks about, you know, the only reason, one of the biggest reason really, businesses fail, people fail, careers fail, is because they fail to escape competition. Escaping competition doesn't mean that you don't want to do good and you don't want to improve. That just means you don't want to pick an area where everybody's going after and there's so much competition, so heated, and jacks the price up and there's no profit for anybody to share, because in a market, you have 3 to 4 players to share a healthy return. More than that, the pie is simply not enough for everybody to go after. I wanted to, after the duplex, I thought, you know, next step is to scale up to a fourplex or apartment building. That's what people do, right? That's what everybody's talking about. And because everybody's talking about it, I think I found the barrier of entry is extremely high, because this apartment building and multifamily has been a not tried and true, but for some people, but I would say it's been many, many years there, and people who I was competing against are people who've been in the industry for years, decades, if not, and they have tons of experience. They've got teams, they got everything. So they already got biggest piece of the pie, and there's really nothing left for me, let alone I couldn't even get into it. I had nothing, no leverage, no advantage, no edge. So for me, I thought, you know, what would be a space that is not as sought after at the time, but there's a lot of potential. That's where I want to go after. And I saw mobile home parks. And mobile home park has been a long ignored asset space, and it has a bad, you know, I think stigma against it. But that's what I wanted. I wanted that because I thought, you know, it not as many people are going after it. That gives me better pricing, better terms. Yeah. I got several deals of seller financing. Actually, that's the first mobile home park deal I got of seller financing. I was able to get into it at really good pricing. That was like, mobile home park is like multifamily 50 years ago. So that would have been, you know, turn back time. If you're in multifamily, you will be at the beginning of the cycle. So that's where I got in. And that I think I found the right asset class and the right space to go after this profitable asset class at the right time. Because a lot of things, real estate especially, has life cycle, and usually 7 years, right? I would say mobile home park is, when I got into it, it was at year zero. And then right now it's at year two or year three, depending on the market. So I think it's extremely important to be at the right place, just like stock market, because a stock can be extremely powerful and the company can be doing really well. But if you buy it at an all-time high, you're not going to make much money out of it. And that was how it was for me for apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. It was already at an all-time high. I couldn't make much money. There's no profit margin. But for mobile home parks, to me, it was like a company that just went public, or it was a private company that nobody knew about, but it's a diamond in the rough that I found out about, and that's how I got into it. And I firmly believe in it.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. And I love hearing that you're so passionate about it. And I mean, I'm curious if you could just expand on, you know, how you were able to understand that the mobile home park space was at, you know, year zero, as opposed to year 5 or 6 or 7. Like, what was it that you could buy? It was easier to get deals to pencil. Was it that you could get the returns that you want without having to stretch yourself? Can you talk more about that?
Yes. So I think you're right on. The reason why when I got in, it was at year zero, because it was, you know, we were exclusively buying all parks at 10 cap rate and above. That's really unheard of in any other asset class. Apartment building, you'd be lucky to get a 4 cap in some areas, sometimes lower. But for us, easily, we were getting 10% and above, and with, you know, relatively reasonable financing. My first deal in 2019, it was 30% down, 3% interest rate on seller financing. And that is almost unheard of. Mm-hmm. You know, you tried doing that with multifamily today. You can't do that. So I think, and just mobile home parks, people weren't talking about it. You know, barely anybody was talking about it. And that is a sure sign for me that it's at very early on in this cycle. Because there's a saying, someone very smart once said, I don't remember who, but this person said that once everybody knows about an opportunity, it might be too late for you because everybody else is going to go in after. An opportunity is only an opportunity when not many people know about it. And that was mobile home park for me.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's hard to buy right when, you know, when the market's so hot and everybody's wanting, I mean, this is just like human psychology, right?
Yeah, right.
It is so important to get in, you know, market timing, et cetera. I'd love to know how you found that first deal and how you were able to get the seller financing to fund it.
Right. So my first deal, mobile home park, it was a small park in Georgia where I'm based. Seller finance, I received the deal from a broker in that area and I liked the deal. The numbers worked out. So I made an offer on seller financing. And I obviously, like I said, it was a calculated risk. So I did do a lot of research on how to make offers and how to make mobile home park offers and got everything. Got all my ducks in a row and made an offer and negotiated a bit and went into escrow. And as far as funding it, I worked with investors I knew based on my experience in duplex and single family. I was, you know, people knew about what I was doing and they were interested in exploring more real estate options with me. So, and that's why I got some of the investors interested in the first deal. And that's how it got started. And that was really the first deal. And then this comes the second deal. It was, you know, as I build up my reputation. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And just real quick. So how did you negotiate with the seller to get seller financing on that? Because you were working with a broker, right? So were your brokers communicating or how did that go?
Yes. So because I worked with a broker, the broker represented the seller and I work with the broker. The broker is pretty much the communication line. Here's the thing. It's important to understand how dynamic relationships work in a deal. See, the broker works for the seller, but he doesn't care if you do seller financing or bank financing or cash. All he wants is this commission at the end, right? So yeah. He doesn't care. So as long as you make an offer and the broker would want to work with the seller to make it work for you, because no matter how the deal gets funded, the seller pays for the commission and he gets paid. So I understood that. And the broker and I pretty much sold this deal together to the seller. It's all a sales thing, you know, as far as coming to offer. You're offering something. How could you sell this offer to the person you're offering to? Mm-hmm. So I think as far as negotiating, you know, I think people need to be in the mobile home park space. For me, my experience tells me that don't be afraid to make seller financing offers. Don't be afraid to make aggressive offers because, you know, sellers love to see offers, any offers they like to see, even if it's something that they do. Because if you're selling something, don't you want to see offers? Even if the offer could be low, the offer could be not ideal, but you want to see offers.
Yeah.
So totally. If you're the first one to make an offer, there's a big chance, a good chance that whatever you offered will work.
Yeah.
So, you know, because of excitement or whatever, you know. So I think as far as negotiating, you know, just make offers and talk through the deal with the seller and the broker and try to get the deal done. And then there are times when the offers is just not attractive to the seller, and that's okay. You have to keep at it. For example, my first single family home, I made an offer and it went under contract with someone else's offer. And that was a backup offer. And I made that backup offer. And about a month later, the previous buyer backed out and they asked me if I wanted to proceed with my offer. And that's how I got my first deal. So you have to really be aggressive about making offers and just put yourself out there.
Okay, for sure. Well, I love that tenacity. Just really awesome. And it's great to hear how you're going after it. Have you found any, how long have you been managing that park? Or maybe you sold it already. Can you tell us a bit about the management of it? And I've heard mixed things about managing mobile home parks. Like sometimes people are like, oh yeah, you just have to do a good job and it's not that bad. And then other times I hear like, well, actually we had a really hard time through COVID. So yeah, tell me all about that.
So as far as managing the park, every park is different. It depends on the tenant base. In a mobile home park, tenants are more like stakeholders rather than just tenants because they own the home. You're running a parking lot business. You're renting the lot from you, not the home. So you are more like a HOA more than anything. So in a parking lot. So it can be a hard, difficult asset to manage. It's a complete different animal than multifamily and single family homes. So going into mobile home parks, you cannot use the same mindset that, well, you can use similar mindset because it is real estate, but you cannot use the same mindset as how you would manage other asset classes because it's just totally a different asset class. There's just so much, you know, the infrastructure is different, your expense ratio is different, and how you manage the park, you know, what you're responsible for is different, your clientele is different. So everything is different. So you have to just, you know, it's probably going to be another episode to talk about management. But I think my business partner and I, he's more on the operational side. And there is just a whole system that we've developed as far as invoicing tenants and keeping things tight. So I would say anyone wanting to get into this, you have to be prepared that it's not easy asset class to manage, but it's rewarding because of the profit margin. So
for sure. Very interesting. And so, I mean, I'm not sure what your comfort levels in talking about this, but what kind of returns are you targeting for your investors? Like, you know, what would qualify as like an ideal investment?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Talking about this, this is kind of the major thing that we offer our investors. Our clients are investors, right? So, and the two customers we serve, tenants that are investors and investors. So investors, we usually do so the overall internal rate of return is usually around 15% to 20%. And the average annual return is over 20%. And depending on the deal, obviously. And then our hold time is usually 3 to 5 years. And we usually do a waterfall structure. So for those of you, so I think the waterfall structure, if you're into syndication before, it's just we have a preferred rate of return, which is right now is at 8%. So once we hit that 8%, it would trigger a split between the sponsor and the investor. So the sponsor will be getting 30% and the investor will be 70%. And the next hurdle is 12%. And then 60-40, the next hurdle is 16%. It's the best split by 50-50 and it stops there. This waterfall structure, this preferred rate of return is due every year. That means every anniversary after your closing date, after you close the deal, this structure resets. So for example, if the first year the sponsors did not hit the 8%, let's say they hit 7%, all right, not 8%. So the second year, that 1% deficiency will be added up to the second year's 8%. So that second year due to you will be 9% before the sponsors get paid. So that really aligns the interest of the sponsors and investors to make sure the sponsors working hard for your return. And so that's, and then, so because of this cumulative cash on cash, 8% preferred rate return. So that's the preferred. But then I think the end result, when everything is said and done after the complete of the cycle, you would be looking at an IRR of 15% and above. And, you know, annualized NOI will be around 20% and above. So,
yeah, awesome. Thank you so much.
For sure.
So another thing that I think is important when you're figuring out this business is figuring out who to partner with. So I'm curious to hear, you know, how you met your business partner and decided that it was going to be a good match.
Right. So how I met him. So we all know Bigger Pockets, right? So there was a post, someone asked about anybody who is a woman who's doing this or something like that, right? Because we all know this space is predominantly male and, you know, different age group too. So at the time I was 25 and I was into real estate. I was already doing this full time. And I responded, I posted, I said, hey, I'm a woman here. You know, I talked about my story, my immigration story, and just how I got started in real estate and what I was doing at the time. So I think that got a lot of people's attention because they just found that refreshing and found that impressive. And that's how my business partner, he saw the post and he reached out to me on Bigger Pockets and he messaged me and we set up a meeting. And everything else was history. So that's how we met.
Yeah, really cool. I mean, so much power there, you know, in sharing your story and networking and, you know, finding a business partner who your interests align and, you know, you have a similar vision. So that's really awesome. Well, and where do you see yourself headed now? So like, how do you guys divide your roles? It sounds like your business partner is more focused on operations. Is that right?
Right. Yes, exactly. So he has an engineering background. He has run several businesses before and successfully. And so his job primarily focuses on the operational side of things. And my job focuses on the investor relations. Well, I'm kind of the visionary of the firm, where I kind of plan for the future, kind of see where we are in the future, have new ideas as far as where John Square Capital is growing. I'm kind of like the face of John Square Capital. So that's how our roles differ.
And what about acquisitions? Does that fall under your category then?
Yes. Acquisition is mostly on my shoulders for sure. Yeah. Acquisition, raising funds, and my business partner and I work together on due diligence, and he does more due diligence because engineering background on certain technical questions, he'll be more capable of that. And as far as finding deals, getting financing done, talking to investors and, you know, making, you know, those phone calls and negotiating, that's mostly on me, 95%.
Awesome. Great. So, and what do you see as far as the future of Johns Creek Capital? I mean, you mentioned business cycles. And so if mobile home parks are currently in year two, I mean, it sounds like you're definitely, you know, well, enjoying the party, but then also probably preparing for whatever is next. So curious about your thoughts on that.
Right. So the next 5 years, I would say in 2022, our goal is to really scale the business to a different level. And we have already grown rapidly in the past couple of years, from zero park to, you know, 12 parks and now to 24 parks and even more in the pipeline. So we are really setting up a process and making it a well-oiled machine with the appropriate staff. We've doubled our staff size in 2021 and growing even more. So we are really just really setting up this infrastructure, building this strong infrastructure to make this machine run more efficiently and find inefficiencies to limit inefficiencies to help us grow faster. And as far as in the next few years, we are moving towards, you know, slightly bigger deals and more of a fund structure, maybe in the next few years. But for now, we're doing it deal by deal. So I think growth would be in progress, would be the growth, progress, and delivery would be what we want for 2022, because we are in the process of exiting some of our deals right now. So we would like to deliver above projected returns for our investors to really show the magic of John Square Capital and what we can do, and to really have people, you know, show people that the magic of this asset class, the magic of us, the magic of John Square Capital. So I think growth is really the key word here in the near future.
For sure. Yeah. Very, very exciting. Well, thank you so much, Charlotte, for coming on and sharing so much about your story so far and the magic of John Square Capital. Really love that. Would you please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share?
Right. So I think I would love to get connected with the audience and the listeners. So the best way to reach me is johnscreekcapital.com. That's our website. And once you go to johnscreekcapital.com, and there is a contact, get in touch button, and there's a small form where you can fill out. And then I usually see that right away, and I will usually get back to you within the day. So that will be the best way to reach me. If you're watching this video instead of listening, there is my email address right here. So you're welcome to email me as well. Awesome. And our website as well.
Yeah, definitely, please, listeners, check out Charlotte and Johns Creek Capital and everything that they're up to. Really wonderful hearing your story, Charlotte, and look forward to talking to you next time. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.